Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Ashley Neshlinas has been blind since birth, but that hasn't stopped her from accomplishing remarkable things. She's a championship swimmer who competed in the Paralympics in 2004, and this spring she'll receive her PhD in educational psychology from Iowa State University. She's hoping to help other students who are vision impaired as they learn math and science, two subjects with a lot of visual material, and she is with me now. Hello, Ashley.
Hi, Charity. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I want to go way back in time. You grew up in Hinton, Iowa, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And for people who don't know, Hinton, Iowa, way out in northwest Iowa, it's a pretty small town.
Yes, it is.
So when you were growing up in Hinton, were you the only blind person that you knew?
I was.
When you were going through school, how did that affect how you participated in classes? Because you went to the public school, right?
I did. I would say that I was very fortunate to have the support system that I did. I would say that overall, it was never a negative experience. I was on the same playing field as my peers, even though every other peer I had had vision. For example, like when I was in math courses, for example, geometry was one, trig, calculus, those types of classes, I would come upon something like an image from a textbook that was omitted from the Braille textbook, but everybody else had it in print. So over the years, I've sort of developed a kind of a toolbox where if that were to happen, I would consult with the teachers that I had at the time and let them know what was omitted, and we would work to put the image together with the tools that I had accumulated over the years. So I would have that temporarily until they were able to produce it with a Braille embosser or something.
Well, you mentioned the Braille textbook. Did you have an aide who actually was specially trained to work with a student with vision impairment?
Yes. It was an interesting situation because I went from aide to aide to aide. It wasn't always the same aide who was in the classroom. I had one aide in elementary school, another in junior high, and another in high school. And so, every aide had their own strengths. And so it sort of took definitely communication on the part of myself and the aide at the time to sort of come to an understanding of what needed to be created at the time.
Well, and I can imagine that, even teachers or aides with the very best of intentions, if they hadn't had an experience working with a student who was visually impaired before, I mean, I can imagine that it takes a lot of empathy and creativity for a teacher to understand what you needed. How did you try to communicate to teachers what it was that you weren't getting?
I would say I would let them know that, as stuff came up, for example, an omitted geometry representation, I would take note of it with, what I had at the time, which was a Perkins Brailler. That's a sort of a clunky brailing machine where I didn't want to use it too often in class because it annoyed everybody else. But when I had to use it,
because
it
was
did.
Noisy or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, it was very noisy. And I would just type in on page blah, 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 figure omitted. And then after the class had ended, I would approach the teacher. I would let the teacher know, hey, as you're talking about whatever the image was, and it was omitted from my textbook. Let me get, do you have some time that maybe we could get together? I'll get the tools out that I think would help us create this, and we can talk about it. And the teachers were fine with it, you know. But I was also very fortunate to have a small class size where the teachers knew the students, and you know, none of the teachers had a problem with it.
What kinds of tools would you use to understand these shapes that all of the other students were understanding by looking at a picture? What would you do to make that work for you?
Well, a few examples would be, if you've ever gone to a craft store and seen what are called wiki sticks, they're these flexible wax sticks, and they come in a package of multiple sticks. And so anyway, we would use bunches of those sticks to create images on the fly. If it was like a two-dimensional graph. So the nice thing about wiki sticks is they've got a combination of a cohesiveness and flexibility. So we were able to bend them several ways and stick a lot of them together to create a two-dimensional representation. When things became more advanced, like they do in geometry and higher level math courses, I would use, for example, things like Play-Doh or solid, these like connected solid things where you would stick different pieces together to create cylinders or pyramids or things of that nature. And we'd sort of work with it that way.
Interesting. Well, I'm struck not just by the creativity and how to do this, but by your ability to advocate for yourself, which of course not all students have, whether they have sight or don't have sight. Where do you think that confidence came from for you to be able to say to the teacher, hey, I need assistance in seeing this in a different way?
You know, I kind of laugh as you ask that, because I think that the confidence I have came partly from my mother and partly from my father, who are both, we kind of joke about it, they're both firstborn, they're both business owners, and they both have personalities that lend themselves to advocacy roles in some ways. And so I think, you know, they were both of the opinion, and they definitely practiced what they preach, that if you want something badly enough, you have to be able to be your own advocate, for one. That's a big part of it. But, you know, another part of it, too, is finding the right people that will listen. And there's, you know, some trial and error in that. But they, like I said, being both business owners, they also, I think, taught, you know, both my brother and myself, I have a younger brother, that you don't give up. You keep working with what you have, or finding new ways of communicating and advocating until you know, get what you want, until you meet that goal.
I mentioned earlier that you're also a championship swimmer. You participated in the Paralympics. I'm sure that's something that a lot of young people without sight would never have dreamed of doing. What gave you the confidence to get in the water and then compete?
I've always loved the water. In fact, I tell my mom and my dad that I feel more at home in the water than I do on land. And so I think, being that they knew that, they had looked for outlets for me to use that competitively, and we found ways to you know, accommodate such that I would be able to swim with my peers. And the way that, you know, some of that was, I think, you know, my mom was a huge asset in that she would go with me to every practice. And as I was swimming, she would walk up and down the outside of the pool and use a pole with a tennis ball on it to tap me on the head so that I would be able to flip and push off, like you see swimmers doing in the Paralympics, mm-hmm. who have vision. And, you know, And also I had the support of a wonderful coach, Paula Hamp, who knew that the way that I learn was different from the way that others learn. You couldn't just show me how to swim, you know, a freestyle stroke or a backstroke or a butterfly and expect that I would learn it. So she actually got in the water with me and used analogies that I would be able to understand in order to show me how those strokes were done. And, you know, then it was, I give credit both to my parents and to Paula.
You mentioned earlier that you were the only blind student in Hinton, Iowa, when you were growing up. Was there a point that you remember at which you started thinking about other students with visual impairment who may not have the same confidence and the same kind of advantages that you were able to create for yourself?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, because I think when I was in high school, I never really thought of it because I was the only one I knew that was totally blind. I knew other visually impaired people, but didn't really get to think about how they went about doing things. And I think where I began to want to understand more about others' experiences was when I had gone to college at the University of Notre Dame and had met professors who had connected with other blind and low vision individuals around the country and around the world who were doing spectacular things. And they had connected me with some of those individuals who I found out, some of which had terrific experiences as I did, but others who didn't have such terrific experiences. And I thought to myself, I didn't realize how fortunate I was, and I really am blessed. But on the other side of it, I want to get to know more about what those unfortunate experiences were that others had, so that, you know, I can somehow be a voice and a help for them.
And in doing your dissertation, this has been your area of research, but in starting to look into it, did you find that there just wasn't a whole lot of information about how blind students learn in the STEM fields?
Yes, I did. And you know, I relayed that to my advisors and they laughed and they said, yeah, we believe you. And they were doing some looking as well. And we were both in agreement. So, I think that was another reason I wanted to contribute by, you know, putting more information out there that wasn't already out there. And I think that's part of, you know, breaking ground. You right. start, you know, from where there isn't anything, and you do what you can to inform others and create awareness by you know, conducting research and showing that this is really, it is important, and there needs to be information on it.
Well, and it's very striking that in 2018, I mean, this was an area of almost new research. I mean, clearly, that sends a message. That has to send a message to a lot of students with visual impairment that this field isn't for you. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So what are your hopes for the future? What do you want to be able to do with the research you're doing now and beyond graduation in spring?
Well, so with the research that I'm doing now, I do hope to, you know, work to get that published, not only, you know, as a dissertation, but as, you know, articles in journals that focus on mathematics education and STEM education and visual impairment. But also, you know, as a line of employment, I would like to be able to conduct research and, you know, focus on what the accessibility needs and learning needs are of students in the K-12 system with blindness and low vision, as it pertains to the publication agency realm. And, you know, I would like to focus my energy on, you know, moving from academia to industry in that way, since I think that's where it needs to go next.
In what way into industry?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of instead of staying in academia, in terms of staying like on the tenure level track, like a lot of people do, I think that, you know, I've talked with a few individuals who work in publication agencies, and they say there's a great need for filling in gaps with accessibility and with doing some training on, you know, to show how blind and low vision individuals learn these types of concepts in math and science, you know, for the purposes of making their materials more usable to people with blindness and low vision. And I think that because I was mainly focused, I was mainly exposed to tactile graphics, and I know that there are other technologies out there. Publication agencies are definitely making moves on those other technologies. And so I feel like it'll be a learning experience for me as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And are you already having people reach out to you? I can imagine
yes.
that it's got to be really exciting for a lot of people.
Very exciting. It's a very exciting time. Multiple people are reaching out to me, and I'll be doing a few phone conversations this week with different individuals from publication agencies, as well as you know, understanding what they would like to see as well.
Well, Ashley, I hope you'll keep us posted as things develop in the coming years.
Oh, thank you very much, Charity. I hope so too. And it was a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you so much, Ashley Neshlinas. She is graduating from Iowa State University this spring with her PhD in educational psychology. She's hoping to help other students who are vision impaired as they learn math and science. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.